Okay, so we're going to be reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 17, Text 14. We don't have that on the board? Oh, it froze. Okay, that's right. Navasu api varsesu bhagavan narayano mahaparusa parusanam tad anugrahat atma tatpa vayum vyohi natmana yapi sannadiyate. So we can chant the synonyms. Navasu in the nine. Api certainly. So varsesu and tracts of land. Tracts of land known as varsas. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Narayana, Lord Vishnu. Mahapurusa, the Supreme Person. Purusanam, unto his various devotees. Tat anugrahaya, to show his mercy. Atma tatva vyuhina, by expansions of himself in the quadruple forms, Vasudeva, Sankasana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. Atmana, personally. Atya api, until now. Sannidhiyate, is near the devotees for accepting their services. Port and translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. To show mercy to his devotees, in each of these nine tracts of land, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Narayana, expands himself in his quadruple principles of Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. In this way, he remains near his devotees to accept their service. Purport. In this connection, Viswanatha Chakravarti Thakur informs us that the demigods worship the Supreme Lord in his various deity forms, Archana Vigraha, because except in the spiritual world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be directly worshipped in person. In the material world, the Lord is always worshipped as the Archana Vigraha, or the deity in the temple. There is no difference between the Archa Vigraha and the original person. And before those who are engaged in worshipping the deity in the temple, in full opulence, even on this planet, should be understood to be directly in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without a doubt. As enjoined in the Shastras, Arche Vishnao Shiladir Gurusu Naran Matihi, no one should treat the deity in the temple as stone or metal, nor should one think that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being. One should strictly follow this Shastric injunction and worship the deity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without offenses. The spiritual master is a direct representative of the Lord, and no one should consider him an ordinary human being. By avoiding offenses against the deity and the spiritual master, one can advance in spiritual life or Krishna consciousness. In this regard, the following quotation appears in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Padmetu paramam vodma purvadye dikchatsutaye vasudev dayo vyohas chatvara kataha karmat tatta pada vibhuta ucha nisvansanti kramadime jalvarvarti sta vaikunta stitta vedavati pure satrodve Vaishnava loke nityahe dwaraka pure sudodad utare swate dvipe charavita pure shirambudi stittatante krodha paryanka damani satvetai kvachit tantre nava vyaha prakritaha Chatvaro Vasudev Vadya Narayana Nishimhakao Haryogrivo Mahokrodo Brahma Chete Navoditaha Chatrabama Tu Vigyanye Purvokta Vityayahari. In the Padma Purana, it is said that in the spiritual world, the Lord personally expands in all directions and is worshipped as Vasudev, Sankarsan, and Pradyumna, and Adiruddha. The same God is represented by the deities in the material world, which is only one quarter of his creation. Vasudev, Sankarsan, Pradyumna, and Adiruddha are also present in the four directions of this material world. There is the Vaikuntha Loka covered with water in this material world, and on that planet it is called Vedavati, where Vasudev is located. Another planet known as Vishnuloka is situated above Satyaloka, and there Sankarsan is present. Similarly, in Dwarakapuri, Pradyumna is the predominator. On the island known as Swetadweep, there is an ocean of milk, and in that mist of that ocean is a place called Arivatapur, where Aniruddha lies on Ananda. In some of the Sattvatam Tantras, there is a description of the nine Varsas and the predominating deity worshipped in each. 1. Vasudev, 2. Sankarsan, 3. Pradyumna, and 4. Aniruddha, 5. Narayana, 6. Nashima, 7. Harigriva, and 8. Mahavara, and 9. Brahma. The Lord Brahma mentioned in this connection is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When there is no fit human being to empower as Lord Brahma, the Lord Himself takes the position of Lord Brahma. Tantra Bhama Tu Vignarihe Purvokta Vidhaya Harihi. That Brahma mentioned here is Hari Himself. Om Agyanam Tanaman Hasya Jnana Jana Shalakya Chakchur Uminitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Tetanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Prupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapatatikam He Krishna Krunun Sundo Dino Bandhu Jagatpite Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Rare Vrinda Vrishpari Vrishpanam Devi Parinami Hari Pri Banchakalpa Guru Brishcha Kripa Sindhu Bipacha Patitinam Padnabhyo Vaishnabhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I want to thank you all for being here, and I'll thank you, all those who stay, if this is not too palatable for you. I ask for your blessings so that we may have something pertinent to say about these various incarnations. It's quite interesting, as I was doing some of the research on this particular shloka, as we look at these incarnations, they come in packages more than once. We see the incarnations coming, as mentioned, as here, and then we see them again in Dwarka. We see it in the pastimes with Lord Sri Krishna. So we see Vasudeva there, and then we see Pradyumna. We see them as expansions, as sons in Adiruddha. We see these expansions happening like this. So it's interesting how these divisions are unpacked. It's like when you go on vacation, you have so many pairs of socks, and then you unpack the socks, right? And you put them in this section. And each day, right, you wear a different pair of socks. But the socks, they have the same purpose. They have the same goal in terms of keeping your feet warm, right? And insulating the feet, cushioning the feet when you're walking like that. But they all start from one primary pair of socks. So we have the same thing with clothing. We have a shirt, you maybe a sari or something like this, or a hat that we may wear. And then we have things coordinated in terms of the days in which we may be using this. So you can see that Krishna is approaching the universe in the same way. This is his potency. And that potency actually is starting from Balaram himself, right? And then from Balaram we're having this Sankarsan, right? And then we get another set. So we see how this universe is expanding to carry out specific functions all the way down to the Mahatattva. So we see it in various different divisions how this manifestation is taking place. So I found a few references here that I thought was interesting. One, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24-35, the Lord is saying, this is in reference to Sankarsan. He says, "My dear Lord, you are the origins of the subtle material ingredients, the master of all ingredients as well as the master of all disintegration, the predominant deity named Sankarsan, and the master of all intelligence, known as the predominating deity, Pradyumna. Therefore, I offer my humble obeisances unto you." And this is prayers being offered very nicely. So we can see we have integration. We can see that the Lord in this particular incarnation is very expert. Now, there's a little bit of history. In the United States, there was a period called Jim Crow. Does anybody know that? Jim Crow? It's known as apartheid. Right? So there's more disintegration than integration. We can see the Lord is very expert. So you can see in the material energy when the living entities, the jivas, are attempting to integrate things, that all species become benefited, there's difficulty. There's some type of discrepancy associated with everyone having their equal share. So we know that from a spiritual standpoint, whether it's a male body, female body, animal body, aquatic, whatever, there's always equality with the soul. And that's on the platform of a spiritual level. Okay? But for the materialist, we see that that's not manifesting at all. Okay, so as the prayer goes, Sankarsana Sukshmaya. So this idea of unto the master of integration, and then unto the subtle unmanifested material ingredients, right? Unmanifested material ingredients, right? In other words, they haven't come together yet. Okay, so we have Mataji, she's in the back, and she's actually doing some sewing. So she's actually manifesting something.
But before she actually starts that process, these ingredients are all unmanifested. Okay, they have to come together. Right? For those who are cooking in the kitchen, we understand this. We have boga. You have some raw materials, some ingredients. And then, and I may say, whoever made the gulab jamuns, they were so nice. So you put those raw ingredients together, right? And you make multiple gulab jamuns, right? Right? So this is our process. We're taking these ingredients because we have some of the science. Oh, he's right there. Haribo. So we have this science, right, of how to put together ingredients. We have a manual. Okay? We use a manual. This word, man-u-l. Right? Man and u-l. Right? It's from the word man, but it means to actually manufacture. That's the word manufacture. To make from hand. The word manufacture. I think you're the expert linguist there. So we have a hand. So we're doing this. So we see that Sankarsan is actually doing that. But from Vasudev, we see these potencies of the Lord, which were equal to Him, but we also find that these different incarnations, the personality actually praying to them, this is a prayer that Naradji was providing to Chitraketu, right? So that we can pray individually to these particular entities, because they bring a specific benefit. But our ideology in our Vaishnava movement is to pray to Krishna. All those things are automatically taken care of just by praying to Lord Sri Krishna. But you can see how things become divisible or compartmentalized because Krishna is moving his energy. Right? So he spends most of his time or his meditation in the rasa dance. And so you see these other energies are doing various other things. So they actually are serving. We see this even with Narayana. He's offering his obeisances as well to Lord Sri Krishna. Right? Even though he's a candle with the same power. Right? The same power of the candle. But this candle is actually offering his obeisances to the original, the origin. Right? Sarva Karna Karnanam. Right? The Lord is that origin of all other things, right? So these energies are being dispensed in this way. So the point of fact that they make in this purport is that the whole universe is maintained by the integrating power of the Supreme Lord, right? So without that integration, things cannot sustain itself, okay? And so when we see disintegration, we see the Lord is he pulls things apart, whether it's a partial destruction or a full or complete destruction. We see the energies are being separated, right? So he's taking rest. Things are sleeping. The living entities are also in his body and they're also resting, right? Their consciousness is at rest before the whole manifestation becomes, again, through the integration of energies. We've been learning about Lord Brahma. And he's trying to make some discovery. Where is my origin? Right? We actually have a science magazine that says Origins, right? So we're trying to understand, where is my origins? This is the primary question that we ask early on in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, who am I? Or what am I? Why am I here? What is my purpose? What is this material world? Right? What's its function? So we see that the material world is manifested because we're not prepared to be in the spiritual world. We're going through a process. Again, we're going through a manual. We wake up, we chant at a certain prescribed hour, we chant a certain number of rounds a day, we follow various different principles. And as a result of that, we're in a preparation stage, right? There's an old U.S. product. It's a laxative. It's called Preparation H, right? So we're also having our own preparation, right? preparation bhakti, right? And it has the same effect. That preparation is to actually help to purge some of these impurities, right? Deal with some constipation, things like that. So this preparation bhakti is actually trying to achieve the same goal. It's trying to develop within us the ability to be prepared to assume our natural identities, right? So our identity is aham brahmasmi. I am spirit soul. But we have these other false identities. Ahankara vimudatma. We're so bewildered by this material energy, right, that we start to assume other identities. I'm Brahman. I'm Grihastha, right? Let alone I'm male, or I'm female, I'm black, I'm white, right? Actually, if there were no sun, there wouldn't be any distinction of gender, right? There wouldn't be any distinction of color. We really have to rely on sound. So if a Mataji is speaking, then we make an assumption that must be female. Right? Or if it's a body like mine, we just assume it's a body like everybody else's. But because we have the integration of sunlight, we move to another level of misusing that energy to miscategorize what we see is those elements being put together. Right? So simply, if you look at it from a scientific standpoint, because of refraction of the sun's light and that prism of our eye, it is the pigment is telling us this looks like this color, this looks like that color, but without that we can't make a distinction. So imagine a blind person. He can't make any distinction, right? All he has is sound, right? The very same thing that Lord Brahma was doing for 100,000 or, you know, celestial years. He was using sound vibration. He got purification so he could know what to do. So we're following a process, this bhakti process. It's actually to assimilate the proper consciousness, because we've done things a little backwards. We went from disintegration of proper consciousness as opposed to the integration of proper consciousness. So what we do, we integrate things that don't actually provide the spiritual endeavor or material relief we look for. Okay? So it creates a deeper bond, a deeper bias. And it actually promotes us as that, you know, I'm the Lord of everything I survey. I make this assessment. We were actually having a conversation yesterday as we were headed to see someone who was doing some treatment on me. And one of the things that we were talking about, and I want to put it in the venue of education, how we see things, the Prasandis, they see there's no God, therefore they can't see. They're saying, I can't see. But they don't use the sense of ear, hearing, to understand. So they base their opinions based on what manifests in their mind, as opposed to what's coming down from disciplic succession. So I have posed this argument. So you say, you don't see God, or there is no God. And I say, there's no George Washington, right? George Washington, if you don't know, was the so-called first president of the United States when they, 1776, when they developed their constitution. So my proposition is, I don't see George Washington. So I don't see George Washington. So he doesn't exist. And they look at me, that's crazy, he's in the history books. I said, so is God. God's also in the history books. right? He's in the Bible. It's a history book. Biblios, right? It's a history. That's what that word. Biblio. It's to chrono histories, right? Now maybe you don't like those histories, but still, it's a history book, right? So they reject that. So I said, well, if you reject that, I reject your prospects that George Washington exists. Well, everybody believes that. I said, well, who's seen this guy? Nobody's seen him. Well, he has a grave. Oh, well, you got me there. God doesn't have a grave because he's eternal, right? He's satchitanam navigraha. He's eternal. He doesn't need a grave. So you can see from that standpoint, this God that's in the history book is superior to George Washington because he has to have a grave. Right? And for me, that's pretty grave. Right? That's a pretty grave situation. The gravity of the matter that your George Washington has to have a grave. And my Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, he doesn't need one. So you have the other point where we have some DNA. We have DNA evidence that he's there. I said, well, based on what? So in order for DNA to work for me, you have to take mine, right? And then if you have some, there's some dispute, and they do this, and they want to prove paternity or prove maternity. They want to prove who the mother and father is. You have to actually have the person present. Right? So you take their DNA. So you're taking some bones, and you take the DNA, and you say, well, this is George Washington. Well, I don't know if that's a descendant. I can't make heads or tails of that. So you're using this speculative knowledge, yet you're criticizing me because what you're doing, what you're accepting as science, is actually just, is faith. It's faith. You take it on faith. And then we touched on the subject of theory, right? To theorize. So when you use the term theory, you're actually making a estimation, or should I say guesstimation, or chance-timation. And we know there's no such thing as chance, right? So you're speculating that there's... these things have developed like the universe. There's no God. There's no person in charge. There's no division of energies. There's no Prajapati. There's none of this. But you're going to propose to me that there's Big Bang, right? All I know is if anyone's worked in a kitchen, if you drop a pan and there's some sound, you say, "Well, who dropped the pan?" So if there's a Big Bang in the universe, you have to say the same thing. Who dropped the pan? Or who made the bang? Who made this banging noise? Right? So there has to be causation. There has to be a personality behind sound. To generate sound, it must be personality. So we're learning, there's much more detail in this. I pulled a lot of stuff. I don't think I'll get to it all. But the idea is, when anything is created, it must be generated from a person. It just can't happen by chance, right? Or by accident, or by theory, right? So if you look at every theory, Big Bang theory, the oscillating effect. You familiar with the oscillating effect? So this is one thing that they've come very close to, but not close enough. You know that the Supreme Lord, he's expanding and contracting. He's breathing. The universe expands out, comes back in. This is called oscillating. That's an oscillator. Expansion and contraction. So, we know that happens because that's coming from Shastra. We can see that things are expanding and contracting. We also see that with us as living entities. Any of you who've had children, your children expand. Right? And as they get older, maybe after 30, maybe 28, they start to contract. It's imperceptible. You're almost like, here's a better way. And I don't mean to expose or hurting one's feelings, but for young men, their hair expands. And then maybe in the mid-20s, it contracts. You go bald. You know, you lose your hair, right? You see that. So even if you're a young man, you can see diminishing effects of the body. These material elements, they come together and then they separate. That's a property of matter. We have to accept that. But these supercilious, not supercidity, but supercilious, silly, circus-like intelligence is jumping around, right? Going nowhere. They make these theories without considering there must be someone behind the activity itself. There's a cause to every action. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. I think it's 18:10, right? There's five causes, right? So the living entities are there. You have the material energies there, right? You have karma, which is there. And then ultimately you have the Supreme Personality of Godhead, fulfilling exactly your desires, if it's warranted. And even to do a bad thing, you have to qualify yourself. You just can't, well, I want to go sock that guy over there. There has to be qualifications. Then, there may be this qualification, he gets to sock me too, and harder. Right? So everything has to be arranged. So we can see this detailed arrangement from the Supreme Lord and his various potencies. And they carry out these particular activities. So they're worshipped for that reason. Right? So we're trying to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the direct, the original incarnation. And in doing so, all those other things are taken care of. Prabhupada used the analogy when you have $1 problems, your $100 will take care of those $1 problems. Right? So that's the kind of wealth we're trying to amass. We want to amass so much devotion for Krishna that all other problems are resolved. We want to invest in our spiritual bank account so that our issues dealing with the material energy, that means dealing with our own consciousness, our own enemies, our six enemies, our mind, dealing with what we think are problematic, I don't have, I can't get, and I want. I don't have, I can't get, and I want. Right? Aham mameti. So we're thinking like, you belong to me, you're my devotee. Right? You're my devotee. You're my devotee. Right? This is my child. This is my car. Right? And we part with all these things. So do you see the material energy has some type of funeral for you when you part with it? No. My experience is working in the prison as a counselor. A number of inmates, or they have a fancy word now, they call them adults in custody. Right? It's a very soft word so no one's feelings can be hurt. Now, we went from inmate to convict. That was the other one. So now, if you really want to be a bad guy and have some kind of acumen, you know, your reputation, I'm not an inmate, I'm a convict. Right? Con. Right? With. Vict. Right? Right? You're victed what? In terms of... and you're in a court of law, you're not, you become vict, meaning you're being sentenced, right? You're being charged. So I'm with charge, right? And it's not electricity, and it's not intelligence, and it's not any kind of real wealth, right? What are you con with? You're con in terms of contrary, okay? You're against that con, right? Contrary. You're against the principles of what it means to be a spirit soul. Or for that matter, human. You actually have to come to the human platform first so that you can execute bhakti, devotion. If you're not human, you can't love. Think about that. Do dogs love? Do cats love? They don't have any concept of it. They only have a concept of sense gratification. So when we take the human form and we engage in sense gratification, we're basically saying, I'm not human. Right? Now, if we take that same sense gratification, right, and turn it into bhakti, then everything becomes nicely satisfied. I'm still at the table, I'm eating. I have to eat, and I like to eat. So, but like to eat prasadam. I like friends, but like to have devotional friends. See, it's just transforming it, right? You're acknowledging. It just simply means sense gratification means not acknowledging Krishna. He's not a part of the gratification. So we're doing the same process of disintegration. In other words, we're trying to separate Krishna, right? So we're not actually ahimsa. We're not actually paramahamsas, right? We're just crows in a garbage scow, universal garbage scow, and it just travels. And as we transverse from one body through this material energy, we're saying, let me be assimilated. Let my consciousness be assimilated into something that does not acknowledge or recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is what we see when we walk out in this community. We see so many people who are disconnected. They don't know how to follow the process of proper assimilation. Right? And so getting into Pradyumna, he's the master of the mind. Right? He's helping. And then from him is coming certain incarnations. Like another set of tattvas are coming, and primarily we're dealing with this whole idea of controlling the mind. So this is the effect. So there's certain prayers we do in order to try to control that. So there are these expansions, these quadruple expansions. This one in particular is going to satisfy that whole object about how to deal with the mind. So each of the incarnations, Aniruddha, they're all having something, as we mentioned, Harigriva, and then, of course, Nishima. And he's in charge of what? Part of the mind? The sixth enemy? Which one?
Anger.
Krodha. Right? But when he does it, it's actually beneficial. We also see that with Hanuman. When he gets angry, it's actually transcendental. Because it's not disintegrating, it's integrating the Lord. He got angry because Sita was separated. We also learn that Lord Ram is also the Vasudev is expanding from him. So we can see Vasudev come again. I mentioned him unpacking your clothes. You have a set of socks, you know, certain set here, white ones, blue ones, green. So you can see with Lord Ram, you can see certain things are manifesting from him. And his brothers, they're also these same incarnations, right? So they manifest that way too. So they manifest in different ways. And they carry out certain different functions. So as we understand this in more and more detail, we can use it in a sense where I'm becoming more knowledgeable, but I look at it this way. If my father can do anything, and I can't really explain all the things he does, but I see them and I hear about his glories, actually my love for him deepens. Because I think he's so great. My father is so great. He's so magnanimous. He can do all these things, but it's bewildering, and at the same time, it's so pleasing that I could be associated with someone with so much greatness. And this may be a place where I have pride in my father. My father, he can do anything. So this is Lord Krishna. He can do anything. So when you want to have some conversation and you It's kind of a kid's conversation. It's not an adult conversation. But someone says, well, you know, my father was in charge of so many different dignitaries of such and such place, and well, my father's was a court judge, a supreme, or my father was a surgeon. I said, well, my father, he owns the entire universe. Right? My father's so much better than your father that he actually gave your father's intelligence to do what you're doing, but he'll take it away one day. So my father's abilities never go away, they actually increase. And I can't even estimate how great they are. I just know he's great. And because of that, if I'm in any kind of situation, if I need surgery, I know he can operate on me. If I need transportation, I know he can give me transportation. If I get hungry, he can do that. And he simply proves that because ants are eating, dogs are eating, and we're eating. Everybody supplied the necessities that they need. So when you think of it that way, yeah, my father's better than you. Well, again, we get back to this cycle of, I don't believe in God. Or, well, my God's like this. We start comparing my God, your God. Okay, yeah, that's fine. We've moved a step up now. Now you're saying my God. You can say that, but you can never say my religion. That's a distinction. See, because you don't make religion. You simply follow it. But you can't say my God. Oh my God. Here's another way to say my God. Oh my goodness. Right? Now where does that word come from? It's a kind of like German origin, right? Gut. Like guten or wooden, right? So you have this word gut. So they say gut. They're saying God. Gut. They just add English because it's so convoluted. They add an extra O. So I always like when I see the Prachandis or the atheists say, oh my God. Right? They don't even know. Right? Because they're so acculturated to saying things, they're not aware of what they're saying. So I'm waiting for them to say, oh my devil. Right? And I said, that's not anybody separate, that's you. You're a devil. You got your little horns and your little pitchfork. You know? All of the things you do. But we have to extricate that demon, as Prabhupada says, demon. We have to extricate that demon. And this is when we look at the integration and the disintegration. We want to pull those energies. And that's subtle energy. That's attitude. That's sentiment. We want to pull those energies out of our consciousness. And as we pull those energies out of our consciousness, then we replace it with something transcendental. And that's Lord Sri Krishna. So, how long do we go till? Nine? Okay, so we have a few minutes, so maybe we'll spend that. Fun part is the questions, and I'll prepare you. I may not be able to answer any. You may be able to answer those yourself. So I'll open this up for any questions or comments, corrections. I'm sure there might be some. I'm so fallen, I have a lot of corrections to make. Hare Krishna? Are we stunned? Hare Krishna. Okay. All right, well, just a few other comments about this. Something for us to really consider from a scientific point of view. And my guru, Bhaktivedanta Swami, he always talked about applied science or technical science. He talked about applying the simple things so that you can execute your bhakti. And just sometimes understanding, because I was reading, Prabhupada used the word aide-de-camp. He used that in reference to these quadruple expansions. Aide-de-camp. Does anyone know what aide-de-camp is? Anyone? Okay. So this idea of aide-de-camp, it means a specific officer is providing assistance to a superior officer. And when I looked at that, I was like, that's Krishna. Krishna is the superior officer. And these quadruple expansions, not just them, but the other expansions, are the aide-de-camp. They're assisting him in executing. We know that when Lord Brahma, Mother Bhumi, and all the demigods were approaching Lord Narayana, they're making prayers, right? We have so many calamities right now. Please, will you incarnate, right? And solve all these problems that we're having with all these demons, right? And so we see the aid, the cat. The assistants are coming. Now we may think, oh, okay, well, some are thinking, maybe in the Hindu philosophy are thinking, well, here's Narayana, now Krishna is an expansion. But what they neglect is that Krishna is never leaves, you know, Goloka, Vrindavan. He never leaves. And then you have Balaram. Then you have Sankarsan. Then you have Pranyun. You have all these expansions. Then it gets down to Narayan, right? And then from Narayan, there's a scheduled appearance of Krishna. So that's already set. He's already has a ticket. He says, I got a ticket. But before I have to do it, I have to do the packing. Once I get there, I have to do the unpacking. So Krishna was already unpacked. All these assistant officers, right? Before he even got there, right? That's how we have to see that, right? Someone went to see me, and you go, oh, you don't think of the point I have a father, biological father, right? But if you say, oh, you don't talk, we have all these devotees in the room, we don't talk about their biological fathers or biological mothers. But for a devotee who comes into the womb of that mother, you could actually say, now here is the genesis, right? Here's the beginning, here's the origin. For that family lineage, spiritual life is actually starting because the devotee has manifested in that family. Okay, so we can look at it like that too. Even though you have parents, right, and grandparents, and great-grandparents, and on and on and on. But really spiritual life is not starting until a devotee actually appears in the family. And we see this with Prahlad Maharaj. The whole purification, right, of that dynasty starts with Prahlad Maharaj. And then he has a grandson, right, another pure devotee. Amadjan. So we're seeing how these things... So things don't actually start until the devotees are manifested. So I'll end with that. And I want to thank you for your attention, your kind attention, and hopefully I said something that resonated with you. And this is my last full day. I'll be leaving tomorrow, so I'm going to miss every single one of you. I'll be thinking about you all the time, and I'll be watching you guys online as well. So stay enthusiastic. Utsaha. Jai Shri Krishna. Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Jai.